Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with new ideas and innovations in our profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. So if this is the first time you've listened to Engaging Internal Comms, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here. If you would like to catch up on what you've missed, the 22 episodes that we've already recorded since the start, you can find those via our website, engagingic.com, or you can find them via the podcast platform that you're listening to this show on now. Existing listeners, it's great to have you back. Thank you very much. Thanks for those of you who've given us feedback via our website, engagingic.com. You've given us some really good insights into what you'd like us to be talking about in the future, what opportunities for potential interviews that there may be out there. So that's really helpful, and thank you very much. Next week, I have an interview with Doreen Anwer. Doreen is senior corporate communications manager at Nell, and Doreen is going to be telling us all about her career and how she's grown a career in internal communications. And I really enjoyed speaking with Doreen. It was a really refreshing conversation. And it's an interesting story that Doreen has to tell. And I think anyone who's working in, whether it's in internal communications or any other area of organizational development, where they're maybe looking to think about how they can grow that career, maybe it's they feel as though they're a little bit stuck, or maybe they think they need to push themselves forward, but they're not sure where, I think you'll find Doreen's interview really, really helpful. So I mentioned the website, engagingic.com. You can sign up for our mailing list there and get access or get emails every week telling you what's coming up on the show next week. And just a reminder when the show comes out, on the day it comes out. You can also leave us some feedback there. As I've said, thank you for those who've already done that. Really, really helpful. We have a Facebook group which you can join, and a group that is by application. So if you want to join that group, find the link. It's Engaging IC. If you go to Facebook and find the group Engaging IC, and tell us which episode that you listened to on or where you heard about the Facebook group. This is episode 23, and just put that in there, and I'll know that you've been listening to the show. And I'll accept you into the group, which would be great. You can subscribe to the show via your podcast platform, which is really helpful for us because it helps us with our visibility and helps other people who are interested in this topic to be able to find us as well. So I think that's enough of that. So on to the rest of the show. Anyone who's worked with senior managers and senior leaders within organizations, and particularly when we are coming at it from an employee engagement or from a communications angle, will know that some leaders are naturally attuned to this sort of thing, that they engage very quickly with what it is we're trying to help them to do, whereas others are a little bit more reluctant. So what I wanted to do in today's episode was explore how can we, as communications professionals and as employee engagement professionals, help our senior leaders to find their voice and to be able to communicate effectively with the rest of the organization. And part of the challenge is that sometimes that they have found themselves in this position because of their technical skills and not necessarily because they are naturally good communicators. So that's what we're going to explore in today's interview. We're going to be talking about the C-suite, and I'll define what we mean by the C-suite. If some of you may have probably heard that term and may not know, fully know, understand what it means, we'll talk about that in the interview itself. We'll define what we mean by the C-suite when we're talking about senior leadership. But my interviewee has got a lot of experience in this area and some really, really interesting practical and useful tips that I think you will find of value. Okay, so my interviewee today is Hilary Yu. Hilary is internal communications leader at Salesforce, and we're going to find out a little bit more about Salesforce from Hilary in a moment. Prior to Salesforce, Hilary was involved in senior IC role at Amazon Web Services, and prior to that, she was at Deloitte Digital, Alaska Air Group, Packard Inc., and the University of Washington. So, hello, Hilary. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
It's absolutely wonderful to have you on the show. And for the listeners, could you tell us where you're based, please?
Yeah, sure. I'm based in Seattle, Washington. I'm here in the lovely United States.
Oh, wonderful. Excellent. And I mentioned that you're at Salesforce. I know a little bit about Salesforce, but for our listeners who aren't familiar with Salesforce, could you tell us a little bit about the business and what it does and how big it is, please?
Yes, of course. Salesforce is the world's number one customer relationship management platform. So we really focus on bringing customers and companies together. We have almost 50,000 employees around the world. We're definitely a very growing company every day and expanding our global footprint. And I'm currently leading executive communications for the security team here at Salesforce.
Okay, fantastic. And did you mention how many people work at Salesforce? How big is your population there?
Yeah, about 50,000 people.
50,000. Okay, wow. So yeah, big organization. So we met via LinkedIn, and we had a quick chat a few weeks ago just to talk about your areas of interest and your passion. And one of the things that you talked about that really fascinated me was your work with the C-suite. And just for our listeners and non-US listeners, I know the C-suite is a term that most people are familiar with. What we're talking about here are, you know, the C-level, what quite widely described as anyone that has a chief executive officer, chief financial officer, chief operating officer, what we may refer to in Europe as senior leadership team, senior exec team. So your passion is with working with that C-suite, and you said you really relish the opportunity of helping that C-suite to communicate effectively across the organization. So it'd be really interesting just to know what is it about that work that really fascinates you, and why do you see getting that C-suite involved in corporate communications is so important?
Yeah, so I think internal communications and especially executive communications has definitely always been an interesting place to be. I think it's really the intersect between connecting employees to company leadership and goals and values. And I really see myself as an employee advocate, and my job is really to help leadership better connect with their teams. I think my real happy place is to come into teams that are experiencing rapid transformation or rapid growth. I think it's really easy for executives and leadership to connect with their team when it's only 100 people or less. It's really easy to, you know, before COVID, you could just walk down the hall and say hi to your team, or you could send out an email and you know that all 100 people would be reading it. But as their team starts to grow to 300, 600, 1,000 plus, it's really hard for senior leadership to really connect with the employees. So I usually find myself in roles that are net new, meaning the team's really experienced this rapid growth and they haven't had somebody like me before to really focus on that communications channel. And so I find this to be the best challenge, as I can really start from scratch and really tailor those communications to the specific group that hasn't had this type of transformation before.
Mm. Okay. And what are some of the challenges that you face? Because I mean, I've worked with C-suite people before, and, you know, communication may not always be top of their priority list. You know, they'll usually have some sort of technical challenges that they're trying to fix. You know, if they're financial, chief financial officer, they'll have, the balance sheet and all of those sorts of things. What are some of the challenges of getting them to value internal communications? And then maybe we'll move on to talk about how we kind of help them develop that capability, which might be something that they've not had to worry about before.
Yeah, so I think you definitely nailed it there. The true challenge is really time. Everyone is busy, especially executives, and finding that time to really understand their message, hear what they want to share, and then ultimately help them distribute it can always be kind of an adventure, depending on what the logistics are. You know, do they want their signature on it? If so, you know, they sometimes have to be the one that sends the email or goes to the town hall. And so schedule really becomes my schedule, becomes their schedule, so to speak.
So yeah, yeah.
You can't really do your job properly without them. So it's not uncommon to see me talking to executives very, very early in the morning or very late at night or in places that you never thought you'd be speaking to them, just purely because I will take any time that I can get. And I think, you know, that's always a challenge, because I think most leaders that I've worked with, you know, they want to do these things. They want to communicate. They want to better connect with their employees. But they're just really, really busy. And I think it's easy for leaders to think that employees understand either their team's goals, their vision, their values, because as senior leaders, they're getting that every day from their own manager, whether that be the board or certain stakeholders. But for the everyday employee, that message tends to get watered down as it makes its way through the organization. So I really like to showcase the value of internal communications through how informed their teams are. And, you know, true success is not only a happy workplace. You know, we want people to be happy. We want them to be excited to come to their jobs, but we also want them to feel like they're a part of where the organization is going. And that's really the true charge of any leader, is to bring their teams along. And so I really like to help them find that. But time is definitely an issue, and it's a struggle that I deal with every day.
Yeah. I mean, applying a kind of a well-worn management approach to this, I guess if you use the kind of Covey urgent versus important, that I guess unless it's a kind of, an urgent comms, or it's something that there's almost a kind of announcement that needs to be out immediately, most comms would probably usually fall into the important, but, sometimes not urgent. And I think obviously with C-suite as they're kind of attuned to working on the urgent and important stuff, and getting them to look at something that may not be, it's not going to be something that will break the business if we don't do it overnight, but not done, for a long period, it will have a kind of a more chronic effect. And I guess it's trying to get them to sort of see that making that investment and the value of that investment is something that they need to do. And is that a sort of a conversation that I guess it's a bit of a leap of faith sometimes, isn't it? I think with people who've maybe not had that experience before, and you're trying to educate them that this is something that we should be investing our time in. How have you kind of won them over with that? You said a little bit about getting them to sort of see and feel what their teams are thinking and feeling. Is there a way that you've crafted that in the past, or helped them feel connected with their people?
Yeah. So I think a lot of it is about building a relationship. So I think, over the years, I've supported a ton of executives, and each one had their own style and attitudes towards what internal communications really meant. And my job is to really connect with them quickly, learn their style, and ultimately help them elevate that message that they wouldn't be able to do alone. And I think, building that trust quickly can be hard. A lot of times I'm privy to sensitive company and personal information about themselves. It's just the nature of the role. And so it's really my job to earn that trust and keep it for the long haul. And I think in order for them to really understand what effective communication looks like, I myself have to put myself in their shoes and really understand what does their day look like, what's important to them, how can I tune out the noise? And it's really hard to do that without trust. And so I think I have to earn it quickly, keep it, and then continue that relationship for the long term.
Yeah, I agree. So what are some of the their capabilities that you've had to help them and maybe coach them and mentor them? Because again, I guess it's easy to assume just because they're in the C-suite that they're going to be naturally adept at communicating. But from my experience, that isn't always the case. They've maybe got there because of their some fantastic technical capabilities that they have and may not have always been communication may have not always been top of that list. What are some of the skills and capabilities that you find yourself helping them to develop and helping them find that voice that maybe, we've said, maybe not something that's natural to them?
Yeah, I think just overall, the overall trend is definitely has to do with speaking. I think a lot of leaders are really good at speaking to customers or speaking to stakeholders or board members or other C-suite officers. But when it comes to talking to employees, employees don't want business speak. They want to hear something authentic. They want to see vulnerability. They want to feel like it's a real person that they're speaking to. And they really want a two-way channel. And I think a lot of times it's easy for leaders to say, okay, well, I'm just going to push the message out and hope that they get that. And employees really want that two-way channel. They want to get that information, but they want to be able to respond. They want to ask questions. They want to better understand how that affects their job. And so a lot of the work I do is finding those two-way opportunities, whether that's small scale in small groups, like a mini town hall or a lunch and learn where it's like the leader and a couple of employees having lunch together, to everything like much larger, like a bigger all hands meeting where maybe the agenda is set, but making sure that it's not just the leader talking at people, the leader is bringing other people in, we're making sure there's opportunity for Q&A. I think that Q&A is really crucial. I think a lot of leaders that I've worked with when they're new to bringing me in, they have a jammed agenda when it comes to an all hands. They want to talk about business metrics. They want to talk about finance. They want to talk about what's going on with HR and all these other things. And then the call starts to get to the end and there's only 2 minutes for Q&A, which to me is the most valuable part of any all hands meeting. And so my job is to inch that 2 minutes into 5, into 10, into 15, so that over time, employees can come to understand, okay, there will always be time for Q&A. I know that my voice will always be heard and that I can always ask a question at the end. And if we don't get to the question, that the leader does a good job following up afterwards. So I think a lot of it is just that consistency of making sure that they're being heard in an authentic way.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to work with a great leader. He was quite old school in his approach, but he used to call them round tables, but it was essentially, mm-hmm. you know, similar to what you've been talking about there. And he would, that they would, there was a book that this was pre kind of social media days. He had a book that was out in the factory and people were able to write questions in that they wanted to bring along to the round table. And then the round table participants who would be rotated. So every year you would go to at least one round table, but he would then sit there and say, okay, you know, what questions have you got? And they would have, you know, if they were going to a round table, they knew they'd had a look in the book and maybe pick out a few questions in there and ask them. And he would, you know, just sit there completely unscripted, very vulnerable, mm-hmm. and you know, took a lot of, but it, the amount of trust that built, and that, you know, he was seen as a good guy. He was seen as, you know, someone who they could trust, and that he would always tell them the way it was. And it was he used to have a really, because that was that particular facility was in an area that had you know, it had lots of unemployment, and this was a stable business in that area, and a lot of people, you know, valued stable employment and just wanted to know that the factory had a future. And that's fundamentally what drove a lot of people's behavior. So, and having that connection to him, you know, really helped build that trust. So I think it's a really, really key role, and having that ability to ask questions. I mean, I guess that brings about for me a question around that. You know, we talked on the pre conversation we had about, you know, the undercover boss show that used to be on the TV, certainly in the UK. I'm not sure whether it's still in the States anymore, but that willingness to sort of step over the line and be open to, you know, what, because you don't know what you're going to get thrown back at you, do you, when people are going to ask you questions and how you're going to respond to that. How do you find that? How do you help C-suiters get ready for that, that sort of empathy that they need to be able to demonstrate in those situations, and also that willingness to feel probably some difficult questions as well, and not just, you know, deflect them, I guess. How do you help them to deal with that sort of situation?
Yeah, so I think the best thing that executives can do, and I had some great executives that I worked with at Alaska Air Group, and, you know, that's a work group that's very distributed. They have many different jobs. They have, you know, jobs on airplanes, jobs at the airport. And so I think the best program we ever rolled out for that team was having the leadership on the ground. And so, you know, you would do these town halls, you take the questions, but the real hard questions come when you're, you know, working a flight with the flight attendants, helping them push that beverage cart up and down the aisle, when you're in the maintenance bay, helping, you know, fix an airplane. And so I think helping executives kind of get into the mindset of what employees are going through helps them answer those tough questions when it comes time for the all hands, because it's a lot easier to say, you know, I can tell you how to do XYZ, but it's much harder to answer those questions if you haven't been in their shoes. I think it's a perfect example of, you know, before we'd go to an all hands, we'd get really tough questions. You know, I'm working a super long flight schedule. I don't have time to, like, you know, check my email when you send out corporate, you know, messaging. I just don't understand how I'm supposed to keep up. You know, before, an executive might say, well, you should just check your email on your off time. But as we know, most people aren't going to do that. You know, we want them focused on safety. We want them focused on the aircraft. And so by having that leader go out and work the aircraft and work the flight, it kind of shows them, okay, there really is no time to check my email. So how can I better connect with them? So I think then when they do give an answer that maybe is not favorable, they can at least have it come from a place of knowing and a place of understanding where the employee is coming from.
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful thing, isn't it? Again, this is going back a long time. I used to manage postal workers. I think no matter where in the world, we know what a postal worker does. And I used to manage a team of them. And you know, one day they challenged me. You know, they said, you couldn't do, you know, it was a bit of fun, but they were saying, you couldn't do our job. We could easily do yours. And I said, well, come on, I'll have a go at doing your job. So they talked me into doing a delivery round one day, and about, you know, it took me twice as long as it took them, and my back was broken by the end of it from carrying this heavy mail bag. And they laughed when I turned back up at the depot, but it built a level of, okay, fair enough, you did it. And you managed to deliver all the letters to the right addresses, I think. But I do think it, and I know it's not always possible for leaders to be able to do that. It's just not practical, but that willingness to step into their shoes, I think, and empathize with their situation, but also, be demanding as well, and be, have a reasonable expectations based on a reasonable understanding of the challenges they face, I think is a really, really powerful tool, which, again, it's an important one to try and influence them to take on board. And have you got any, other than Alaska, have you got any other practical examples of where you've been able to, literally get people to walk in each other, a C-suiter to walk in the shoes of an employee? Or is there more maybe ways where that isn't, just practically physically possible to do, that you've found to sort of circumvent that, but still get the same impact and the same empathy?
Yeah, I think, a big thing that's a part of that is that internal communications people, especially folks that work on executive communications, have to be willing to do that too. So I may ask executives and C-suiters to go and do these activities, but I also have to show that I'm willing to do it, because it's hard for me to craft those communications if I'm not going to do those as well. And so, when I started at Amazon, it was my very first technical job. I never worked in tech before in my life. I could not tell you the difference between a container or any of those like bucket things that we talked about when I first joined. But you know what? I took that as a challenge. And I think, the leaders I was working for were very technical. They really understood the business. They were very good at what they did. I would be doing them a disservice if I didn't go and learn those things. And so I think a lot of it is also about the internal communications professional really going deep into whatever that area of expertise is. So, when I worked at Amazon, it was going to learn everything I could about cloud computing. What are compute services? How does it work? How do we support our customers? And that in itself can help build better communications. It can help build better connections between the leadership team and employees. And I think, what we tried to do in our all hands there is that we really wanted to also offer anonymity when it comes to asking questions. And I think it's really easy for executives to be like, well, my door is always open. People can always come and ask me a question. And I think that they forget that sometimes it's not that easy. Employees are worried about how will it look if I ask a question? What if it's not an intelligent question? What if it's something that I should already know? And so a lot of times questions don't get asked because the employee just doesn't feel comfortable asking it directly. So I also see myself as kind of a clearinghouse of, maybe you don't feel comfortable asking the executive directly, whatever the question is, but maybe you would feel comfortable coming to me directly and asking me to ask the question, or maybe you send me an email and I relay the question. And I think that trust that I talked about in the beginning of the trust between myself and the executive also goes the other way. I have to have trust with the employees as their advocate, that they trust that they can come to me and I'm not going to divulge their name. I'm not going to talk about, so-and-so asked me this question. But I am going to get them the answer. And a lot of times it's easier for me to get the answer because I have that relationship and that trust with the executive. And I think the same goes for my current role at Salesforce. I haven't been in security before. I know cybersecurity is a large and growing industry. And so I can't be taken seriously if I don't go and do the work to really understand what our teams are doing. And so I'm doing my own mini roadshow to kind of understand what each department does, what does their day look like, kind of like a mini persona project. What are their likes? What are their pain points? How can I best communicate with them? And then when it comes time for me to work with the chief trust officer, I can say, these two groups really like it when you come to their staff meetings. They like to see your face. They like to ask you questions in person. But this group, they really don't like to see you in person. No offense, but they would rather you send an email and then they could write back to you when it's a convenient time for them because of their schedule or whatever that looks like. And so I think a lot of it is it's my job to determine what the landscape is and then place the executive in places that would be a good place for them to connect while also allowing them to be successful in that communication.
Yeah, that's tremendous. I mean, it totally resonates. I worked for an American owned multinational in my career, and one of their principles, it was part of their career growth model, which is, if you know, you want to have a successful career here, there's something you need to be able to demonstrate. And one of their qualities there was knowing the business cold. And what that meant is, regardless of where you work, whether it was, you know, I worked in learning and development, but you know, everybody in the business was expected to at least have a reasonable understanding of how we make, move, and sell our product. So it wasn't okay. Well, I work in L&D, so I really don't understand quality, or I really don't understand logistics. You had to kind of have an understanding of that. And I think having a bunch of leaders and managers across the organization who have that, they know how the supply chain within the business works, and they can empathize with different roles, and they feel it's, you know, not just my team, it's the whole thing that all working together that is important, I think is a really important quality. And I think it's a great tip there for any internal communications people, you know, who are listening to this, is to, you know, you first and foremost need to understand your business before you can, you know, understand your audience and the senior leadership. You've got to really understand how that business works and how that business measures success. And so you can, you know, resonate your communications ultimately are guiding that organization towards better results. You know, that's what you're trying to do, isn't it? However you define them.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So you talked a little bit earlier, you know, you referenced about the pandemic and we've managed to avoid it so far, but I guess it's inevitable that we, you know, we do need to talk about it. I think it's also not just, you know, it's a moment in time that will shape the next, you know, 5 years at least, I would imagine. Just from your perspective about what we've been talking about here, about getting that visibility and that engagement with the C-suite, with the employees, has it helped or hindered? You know, because I do hear stories that actually in some way it's actually helped make it people more accessible and visible, but at the same time, you know, it's not probably what we would choose. How have you found that balance between, you know, how that's helped or hindered your work with the C-suite?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, the pandemic has certainly brought its own set of challenges. I think internal communications always has challenges, but the pandemic has kind of layered on top of that. I think the largest really is that we're facing an increasing amount of information overload. You know, employees are getting more information than ever before from so many different sources at rapid speeds, and it's really hard for them to kind of tune out the noise and tune into what really matters. And I think my role has become even more important as we work to kind of bring employees along this journey, keeping them informed, making sure they feel supported, but doing this completely remote, having no opportunity to really like get that connection in person has made it really difficult. And I think we have to remember that C-suite executives are not immune to the pandemic, and they're definitely facing their own set of challenges. And I think all levels of the organization are kind of facing this great act of balancing. And it's really up to our leadership team to make sure that they're really modeling what this could look like. You know, what does success look like in this new era of work? It's definitely not a one size fits all solution. And I think the best thing that executives can do is really have empathy, try to be transparent when they can. And also it comes back to that vulnerability. I think a lot of times it's easy for leaders to focus on the work that needs to get done, especially in this pandemic. You know, there's a lot of work that needs to get done. People are really focused on the tasks at hand, but it's really easy to then not model the things that you're asking your team to do. So, you know, you might be saying to your team, everyone, make sure that you have time, you know, for yourself, that you're taking well-being breaks, that if you have kids at home, you're making sure that you aren't burning out because you're taking care of them and doing your job. But then employees don't see their leadership team modeling that. And then it's kind of like, well, you know, they said that, but I don't see them doing it. So should I be doing it? Will I get in trouble if I don't? I think I've been really lucky during this pandemic to work for leadership teams that really are modeling that. They are definitely not doing it perfect because nobody can, but they're showing different ways of how they're managing to juggle all of the things on their plate. And I think that's really the best thing that executives can do right now, because employees are struggling. It's a very difficult time out there, especially in the US. Most kids, if you have younger kids, they're at home. And so trying to juggle that homeschool schedule, plus getting their demanding job done, plus any household duties they have, plus whatever other things they have on their plate, is just incredibly hard. And so I think trying to filter that noise down and really get the most important information to employees is key. And I think when we started this pandemic, we were like, over communicate, like send as much stuff as you can, send an update every day, let people know what's going on.
Yeah.
But now we're in this for the long haul. So we really need to take a step back and figure out what does that strategy look like? What is just the right amount of information so that employees don't feel overwhelmed, but they still feel like they have access to the information that they need? And I don't know if we know that answer yet.
No, I agree. And I thought there's a couple of things you said there. One that resonates is I think it's been a great leveler in that, exactly what you said. It's been very difficult to not see that we're all kind of in the same boat to a certain extent. So regardless of what jobs we've got, you know, we're all trying to juggle home life, you know, the insanity of just being trapped at home during that period anyway. And also then, you know, with those of us, you know, with kids or with other priorities or other caring responsibilities and trying to balance that. And so I think we've all, you know, no matter where you are in the organization, whether you're the C-suite or you're the front line, I think we've all kind of been able to sort of empathize with each other a lot more. But I think that's a really good point. But I also think, you know, that whole point around the accessibility is really important as well, and that visibility, but also the information overload. I was talking to a client yesterday about this, and the fact that we probably need to sort of thin out the amount of channels that we're trying to use and use the channels for the right purposes. There's a lot of pull information where we just need to put it out there so people know where to look for it if they need it. But there's also the stuff that we need to push into the organization. We need to just narrow that down to, you know, one or two channels and use them really well. And obviously that pair back on the emails, because that's the thing that everybody complains about, how many emails they get.
Yes.
So going forward then, Hillary, I mean, it's likely, even should we be, you know, blessed enough to get a vaccine and be able to, you know, not worry about this, you know, it's unlikely the world is just going to flip back into how it was. And I think most people agree there's going to be some sort of hybrid, you know, we're probably going to work a bit more from home than we have in the past where it's practical. You know, looking into the future with your crystal ball, how do you see the long-term effects of this in terms of the way that the C-suite engages with the organization when we may have in hybrid workforces, sort of semi-home, semi-office-based, maybe a little bit more diverse in terms of working patterns and working styles, et cetera? What do you see as the long-term challenges for connecting the C-suite to the rest of the organization?
Well, I think I may be lucky in some ways because executives will always have to communicate to their teams. So it doesn't change kind of my overall body of work, because when they're not communicating, that means that I haven't done my job effectively. So I think that's good because that part doesn't change for me. But I think it's going to be a lot about keeping the lines of communication open. I think, you know, with everything that everyone will have going on, a lot of it is going to come down to trust. I think it's very easy for executives to say that they trust their teams, they trust that they're going to do the right thing. But this pandemic has really forced executives to have to actually trust. They didn't really have a choice.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of employees would say that prior to the pandemic, they didn't feel like they had the trust and the kind of autonomy to go and do what they needed to do. But the pandemic has forced even leaders that just were really on the longer term of the spectrum, that were kind of anti-work from home, don't really like to balance, just want people, you know, to be in the office. It's forced them to have to rethink what productivity and what success looks like. And so I think for C-suite leaders going forward, it's going to be really important to keep those lines of communication open because of that trust that they're affording to employees. And I think executives have to make a conscious effort to really make sure that they're providing those two-way opportunities, especially in larger organizations such as Salesforce. It's harder because we have so many employees on our team, but I think every little bit counts, and employees should be able to trust that their leadership team is going to offer those opportunities and that they will be able to give feedback and timely feedback at that, so that we can kind of continue this ongoing change that everyone is going through. And I think if we don't continue to keep those lines open, and it's going to be very easy for employees to not feel connected to the business. And that is where things get very murky. And we have to go into like retention and like, what does that look like? But I think the key here is really going to be making sure that we're finding that right balance of communication while also providing accessibility to leadership, because not having that in-person aspect where, you know, you come into the office, you know, the executive team is there because you can see all the doors open to their offices. Now they're kind of behind a chat screen and you have to see, like, are they online? Are they not online? Should I send them a message? So we need to provide those two-way opportunities at a consistent cadence so that employees know when they're going to hear from their executives.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really important, I think, that we don't end up with a kind of two tier, three tier, you know, these people seem to be in the know, but these guys don't get hear anything because they're not in the office. You know, it's going to be a really tricky balancing act, I think, isn't it? And sometimes it can not actually be the case, but the perception is, you know, whenever I've worked with people who work remotely, there's always a tendency to feel as though you're being left out in some way, shape or form, even if it's because, you know, and you've chosen that way of working, it suits your lifestyle. So I think it's a really it is a delicate balancing act, I think, that we're going to have to find. Well, look, that's been amazing. That's been a really, really interesting conversation, and you've given us some amazing insights there. I think for me, one of the key takeaways there is this accessibility, this visibility, this willingness to sort of have empathy and to walk in each other's shoes. And I mean, what you've also demonstrated, I think, also for a really important aspect for internal communicators is to really understand the business that you're working in and be able to relate to your, not just your audience, but your customers, the people whose messages you're communicating as well. I think all of those things are really important, and taking the time to understand the business and the challenges that everyday employees face, and being able to sort of relate that to what are the kind of things we need to be communicating and how do they want to find information out, I think is a really important tip. And I think that a lot of our listeners will resonate with them. Maybe they've already done it already, or maybe it's something that we'll just sort of, maybe that's something I could revisit. Anything from you that, you know, just to wrap up and summarize, or any kind of final sort of points that you'd like to make before we kind of bring things to a conclusion?
Yeah, I think, just to kind of add on to that, I think a lot of internal communicators support work groups that maybe have desk jobs, and we didn't really talk too much about that. And it's not as easy to kind of get into their mindset, because what will you do all day, you know, sit next to them at the desk or virtually now, will you just open a chat screen while they're working? But there are ways to better understand what that work group might be working on, whether that's, you know, going on customer calls, you know, asking if you can be a shadow on the wall while they meet with customers, you know, hear how they're making their pitches, how their day goes. I think there's a lot of ways to engage with employees that spend a lot of time at the desk. It's just kind of thinking outside the box of what that might look like.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Really good point. So Hillary, I forewarned you, as with all of my guests, that I always like to sort of close things out with a little bit of a something you can tell us about yourself that not just me, because obviously we've relatively just met, but even people who work with you or know you quite well don't know about you. A little bit of a secret, maybe something you've done in the past or you do now that you don't tell everyone around that you're happy to share. So it's over to you, Hillary. What's your something we didn't know about Hillary? Fact.
Yeah, so I think I get this question at least once or twice a day, and it can even be from people that know me very well. And it all has to do with my last name. It is a very confusing, very unique, very unheard of last name. Yeah, and it truly is just the one single letter U. We don't know how it became that way. We don't know why it is that way. Nobody in my family seems to know. It just like goes back like many, many generations. But it is truly one letter. And, you know, when I transitioned to technology as my career field, it threw a lot of things off because a lot of computers do not like single characters. It's just part of like the built-in programming. And so I think it's been an interesting journey because sometimes I'll go places and I just can't use my name. So I have to come up with lots of different names. I've gone by like Hillary Unicorn, Hillary Unique, because it just won't take the last name.
Wow. But that's amazing. I asked you the question at the beginning of you didn't go into that level of detail, but I said it, I just want to make sure I pronounced it correctly. So have you done any sort of research into, you know, where it came from, or its origins, or you know, because it is unique. Unique, if you excuse the pun. I don't think I've ever seen a single letter surname. Anyway, do you know roughly how it came about, or have you never managed to find that out?
Yeah, so I feel like it's just kind of like ironic how it worked out. So when my family came here from China many, many generations ago, 5+ generations ago, yeah. My family was like, hey, we should change our name to sound more quote unquote American. And so the translation from our Chinese name, which was Y-E-E-Yi, is the letter U.
Right.
And so they were like, perfect, we'll like assimilate really well. Everybody will understand our last name. It will be awesome. And then all these decades later, it turns out it's even more confusing than what it would have been if they had stuck to that other name.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly unique, and I think it's brilliant. I think it's great. It's very, very memorable anyway. So I think it certainly serves a great purpose in that respect. So,
Yes, it does. You'll never forget me.
No, exactly. No, I was going to say, to finish off, how can we find out more about you? And I guess there aren't many Hillary Yus on LinkedIn, but I will put your LinkedIn URL in the show notes for people who want to find out a little bit more about it. How else can people find out more about your work and engage with you, Hillary? I know you've got your own website, I believe, as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can definitely reach out to me on my website. I had to add that middle name in there because that one letter last name, if you search Hillary Yu, you get a lot of really weird stuff. So I don't recommend
I'll take your word.
But you can always go to my website, and you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm always happy to connect with other people in the field or people that want to be in the field. I just love talking about this stuff and could talk about it all day.
Yeah. Oh, and it's been really, really, really lovely speaking to you, Hillary. It's been a really nice conversation, and I hope not the last time that I'll have a chance to speak with you. And hey, who knows? We may get you back on the show at some point in the future to talk about another topic that you I'm sure there's many others that you're equally qualified to talk about.
I'd love that. That would be awesome.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Hillary, and on behalf of the listeners and for your time today, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you. You too.
Ideally, everyone in your organization would be on the same page. They'd be facing in the same direction and towards its vision and goals. However, in today's fast-moving world, as we all know, it can be really hard to get employees to see the big picture. For example, what are we aiming for? How are we going to get there? And how does my role contribute? When your employees don't see the big picture, they can make the wrong decisions, they may feel less of a sense of belonging, and they may not fully contribute towards your organization's objectives. So how do you consistently put large numbers of people in the picture in a way that helps them understand what your organization is trying to achieve, but also do that in an engaging and effective way? At The Big Picture People, we combine visualization, discussion, and interaction to fully engage your employees in the organization's big picture. We create light bulb moments for your employees, and we bring your values, your strategies, your objectives, and your change processes to life in a really rich, clear, and visual way. We also show your employees the complexity of the world that you're operating in and how their role contributes towards organizational priorities. So if you see the value of putting your people in the picture, head across to thebigpicturepeople.co.uk and book a free 30-minute consultation call via the link on our homepage. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you've enjoyed this episode. We'd love to hear your thoughts about the show and any questions, ideas, or feedback that you'd have. Anything you'd like us to cover on future episodes too, please. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up to our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show and anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it directly via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review. And also if you could leave some verbal feedback there as well, not just stars. That's always nice to know that we've been appreciated, and particularly how we've helped you. If you know anyone else who might like the show or might benefit from it, please tell them, please share it with them. Please share the link to our website, engagingic.com. And that will be great, because we want to grow our community. We want to get as many people involved in the show as possible. And the bigger, the better. Okay, thank you.